This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
In the last days, a bombshell in the case of a Florida children's book author and her husband accused of horrific abuse of her adopted children. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us. Did a successful Florida children's book author, Jennifer Wolfthal, and her husband, Joseph Wolfthal, execute a years-long campaign of horrific abuse, including beating her adopted children with a so-called whacker, forcing them to write lines over and over and over like Harry Potter had to do, and feeding them only a mixture of cereal and vegetable puree? The little 8-year-old daughter rushed to the hospital, critically ill, put in ICU with a litany of medical emergencies such as kidney and liver failure, sepsis, a staph infection, open infected wounds on both legs, and pneumonia in both lungs. Ugh. According to an affidavit we obtained, the child also suffered sores on her leg, infected and ruptured, a chipped tooth, two black eyes, and this little girl weighed only 40 pounds at age 8. There were also two other victims, a 9-year-old boy and an 11-year-old girl. What more do we know about the abuse? Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of it all, if we can. First of all, a renowned defense attorney, Atlanta trial lawyer Randy Kessler, Professor Emory Law School, past chair in the ABA, author of Divorce, Protect Yourselves, Your Kids, Your Future. And you can find Randy Kessler at ksfamilylaw.com and on Instagram at rkessler23. Karen Stark joining us, psychologist out of Manhattan at karenstark.com. Former cop, now private investigator, started his own PI firm, Crispin Special Investigations, and you can find him at crispininvestigations.com. Special guest joining us from Child Help, National Child Abuse Hotline as well, Daphne Young, and you can find her at childhelp.org. Renowned pathologist joining us, Dr. Michelle Dupree, forensic pathologist and author of Homicide Investigation Field Guide and, important for today, Investigating Child Abuse Field Guide. Alexis Tereshchuk, to you first, investigative reporter with CrimeOnline.com. Alexis, tell me about the injuries to this little child. What are they?
Oh my goodness, this little girl was taken to the hospital. She had open wounds on her legs. So that means not just, you know, a scrape when you fall down, you fall off your bike, fall off your roller skates, but open bleeding wounds that had not been taken care of. She had sepsis. She had pneumonia in both lungs and multiple bruises, in fact, on her neck and on her back. There were red marks as if she had been tied up.
You know, I'm trying to take in all the ailments to this little girl, all the suffering she was going through. To you, Randy Kessler, Atlanta trial lawyer, isn't it true that if a teacher notices anything wrong with a child, like bruises or a lot of cuts or anything to suggest a child has been abused, they have to report it under the law?
Yes, they're what we call a mandated reporter. Therapists, physicians, teachers, if you notice something that leads you to think that the child has been abused, it's your job to report it to the authorities. So this is sort of the whole world upside down that she got reported on instead of being the one reported. Just incredible.
You know what it reminds me of, Randy? A case I tried not too far from your office in the Fulton County Superior Courthouse. And the defendant's name was Walter Gates. Mm-hmm. And he, at the time, owned nearly all of the horse-drawn carriage and livery trade in the city of Atlanta. Bottom line, rolling in money. And he was charged with molesting two little girls, aged 3 and 5. I can still remember them so well. Just
beautiful, Randy. And I got to investigating him, and you know how I love similar transactions. I found out Mr. Walter Gates's oldest daughter, who I later tracked down, took me a long time. She was living in a flop house out in DeKalb County. I found her sitting in a bedroom in her slip, smelling like booze, not her breath, her skin. And the room smelled like cigarettes, old cigarettes. There was a reason for that. Back when she was in the seventh grade, I found a school detective had filled out a report that this little girl, 13 at the time, had come to school with a black eye and a busted open lip. And she said her father, Walter Gates, did it. You know how many little girls I found out he molested? That's the case I got held in contempt for. That case right there. And all of you and your ilk defense attorneys all piled into the courtroom. I don't know, it's just like amazing how they found out so quickly to see me get fingerprinted. Well, what I'm saying is an open wound, and the teacher told the school detective. But guess what? Nothing was done. Sounds like same thing in this case, Randy Kessler.
It does. And the worst thing that happened to him and the best thing for that victim is that you were assigned to prosecute that case, Nancy. But, you know, even worse is that...
That POS is behind bars. And let me just tell you, that's a technical legal term. Go ahead.
And even worse is these parents are adoptive parents. I mean, there's something special. We think adoptive parents in my world are very special human beings that take in children that don't have a family. To that, I mean, talk about adding insult to injury. It's just unbelievable. This set of facts is, I can't comprehend it.
But you know what? I think I'm remembering a very critical fact to Alexis Tereshchuk. They weren't reported by a school teacher because weren't they homeschooled?
Exactly. These three children, all under the age of 12, are homeschooled. And here's the thing. She was also an elementary school teacher. So, of course, when
Wait. I know that the mom is a very well-known author of children's books. The big hit for her was called, quote, A Real Friend by Jennifer Wolfthal. That is mommy's name. They adopt three children. I'm looking at their home. It looks like, you know, a ranch house. They've got an enclosed backyard, a lot of nice grass. It's landscaped. It looks great.
You know what you cannot see in that picture?
Tree-lined neighborhood. What?
You know what? You know what you cannot see in that picture that the police said was a terrifying detail? Inside that house, the children, their bedrooms, the handles on the door were reversed and the lock was outside so the parents could lock them inside this house. That's what you don't see in this house of horrors from the outside.
You know, Alexis Tereshchuk, do you remember how much I wanted the twins?
Yes.
And there were a lot of close calls. Can you even imagine someone treating these children this way?
No. They adopted them too, even extra steps to take care of and love children. And these kids were actually telling the people, we don't want to go back there. We don't want to be there.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
In the last days, a bombshell in the case of a very successful Florida children's book author. She and her husband learned their fate for years of horrific abuse heaped upon her adopted children. That's right. After charges of aggravated child abuse and neglect with great bodily harm, they will serve 12 years and 10 years respectively. 12 for her, 10 for him. This is pursuant to a plea deal. What does that mean? They would likely get much worse if they went to trial. I frankly think they should have gone to trial and each one get 20 to life. But going forward, prosecutors now say the children are living with another family and the Wolfthals will spend, quote, significant time in prison while the other family protects the already traumatized victims from the stress of having to testify. I don't know about that. I'd like to see him go to jail for life. This case shocked and sickened the Florida community where they lived. Catch this. the adopted dad, Joseph Wolfthal, initially tried to claim the little 8-year-old daughter that ended up in the intensive care unit got her injuries by falling over and, quote, brushing her teeth too hard. Oh, my stars. When Seminole County sheriffs arrived at the home, they found two other severely malnourished children, discovered their bedrooms had locks from the outside. The children described regular daily beatings by their parents, including the use of a whacker. They only got a mixture of cereal flakes, water, and vegetable mush to eat when they did get that. The children were forced to write out humiliating phrases thousands of times. In one example, deputies found over 1,100 written paragraphs saying, "My body stays flat on the bed at all times. I was never given permission to move or say anything else. Now I get to write about this along with everything else. I am a fool." That's what the child had to write over and over and over. Oh, what more do we know?
Take a listen to our friend Jackie Howard at crimeonline.com.
Growing up in Florida, the now 41-year-old woman loved playing teacher. She says she would line up her stuffed animals for students in a class. As an adult, she followed that early trend, graduating from the University of Central Florida with a BA in elementary education and for 8 years taught fourth grade in public school. She met and married Joseph Wolfthal. While Jennifer Wolfthal taught school, her now 39-year-old husband worked as a software analyst at Lockheed Martin. In 2014, the couple adopted three children, and the school teacher became an author. Jennifer Wolfthal published a children's book entitled A Real Friend. The picture book, intended for ages 4 and up, is about best friends who get into a fight and how they patch up their quarrel.
You know, it's amazing to me. Karen Stark, a New York psychologist, you can find her at KarenStark.com. Karen, how someone doesn't just get pregnant and have children. It's no accident. They go through so much to adopt these three. She, Jennifer Wolfthal, and the husband, Joseph. They go through all that to have these children. Then they turn up at the hospital, and in this advanced state of illness, kidney failure, liver failure. Well, hold on. Dr. Michelle Dupree, what is exactly kidney failure and liver failure and sepsis? What are those three things? Don't you have a long time lead up to that? Can't you tell something is wrong?
Nancy, yes, exactly. Sepsis actually is a form of blood poisoning or an infection that has gone awry in the body that gets into the bloodstream and basically goes to every organ in the body, including the brain, the lungs, the liver, the kidneys, everything that is supplied by blood. Sepsis can actually be fatal or lethal within 12 hours if it's severe enough. So that's a very serious complication. Renal failure, again, the kidneys shut down. They do not then process the waste and the toxins in the body, allowing them to build up. Liver failure, the same thing. The liver doesn't work anymore. All of these things can actually be caused by malnutrition, which we know that this child suffered.
How can you look at a child and tell it's malnutritioned? I mean, other than obviously we would know the child was thin, but other than that.
There are a lot of signs, Nancy. One, of course, is muscle wasting because the body begins to eat the muscle to have something to survive on. Sunken eyes, retractions in the lung or the rib area and in the neck area as well. The skin becomes very, we call it turbid, which is a very sort of pasty look and very dehydrated.
Guys, what happened to these three children, ages 8, 9, and 11? Renal failure, liver failure, sepsis, malnutrition, open wounds. Take a listen to our Cut 1. This is Amanda Dukes at WESH2WESH.
41-year-old Jennifer Wolfthal of Castleberry was arrested New Year's Day on charges of aggravated child abuse and neglect after investigators say a child in her care was hospitalized in critical condition. According According to the arrest affidavit, an 8-year-old girl was brought to the hospital with a variety of injuries. Seminole County Sheriff's deputies interviewed a relative who told them Wathall had claimed the child's injuries came from a series of accidents and falls. But the arrest affidavit says investigators determined the girl's bruises and severe cuts were not from injuries. They found the girl to be critically ill and took her to the pediatric intensive care unit at Advent Health.
Accidents. They found the girl was critically ill, but the mom says the bruises and severe cuts were just from accidents and falls. As a matter of fact, take a listen to our cut four, Dave McDaniel, Wish 2.
41-year-old Jennifer Wolfthal was back in front of a judge at the Seminole County Jail Wednesday afternoon, exactly where the children's book author was a few weeks ago. She now has new charges of false imprisonment. Early January, her arrest came after an 8-year-old allegedly in her care needed to be hospitalized with severe injuries. Injuries Wolfthal said came from slips and falls, an explanation medical staff didn't believe.
Slips and falls? An 8-year-old slips and falls and gets kidney failure? You know, the dichotomy, Randy Kessler, I guess you see it in court all the time, the public image that someone gives off compared to what's really going on with them. Here you've actually got a children's author, an elementary school teacher, who is clearly beating her children and starving them. But no one would know that. Nobody at the schools, nobody in the neighborhood, obviously not her publisher or people that buy her books.
Incredible. Even a degree in elementary education. It's, you know, what we always hear when we interview the neighbors of the defendants and perps, they always say, oh, he was the nicest guy. They would never have done that. Over and over and over. You know, when you're a lawyer like I am, you see behind closed doors, people walk in, they look normal, then they start to tell you the facts of their situation. It's incredible. It makes me jaded. I walk around the world sometimes and I look at people and I think, I wonder what they're really like, because it is just unbelievable what is behind the facade of so many people. It's a sad thing.
It's hard. Have you ever felt that same way? Robert Crispin, former law enforcement, now with his own PI firm, Crispin Special Investigations. After all we see, all you see, do you ever have a hard time accepting that anybody's really as they present?
Absolutely. It's tough. You know, you try to compartmentalize these and put them behind you. But when you work these cases, and I've worked a lot of these cases, I worked a lot of crimes against children in my day. You know, it's tough. And like your last guest just said, you walk around and you kind of look at people and you wonder what's going on behind closed doors. But you know what? That's what we signed up for. That's what we did. We helped a lot of people. But yeah, it absolutely does change your thought process and you try to compartmentalize it. But it's tough sometimes.
Guys, I want you to take a listen to our cut nine, Dave McDaniel at Wish 2 and Meredith McDonough.
Jennifer Wolfall told authorities the injuries to the child were from a series of falls and mishaps, but medical experts didn't agree. The arrest report for Joseph Wolfall indicates that the doorknobs on the children's bedrooms were installed with a locking mechanism on the outside of the room, backwards, and that papers found at the home included someone writing, "My body stays flat on the bed at all times," and never given permission to move or say anything. The sheriff's office isn't commenting at this time, saying the reports speak for themselves. In the report, investigators indicate they don't want to have Joseph Wolfall have any contact with Jennifer Wolfall if he's released from jail, or any contact with the three children. He's quoted as saying, "Can I call my attorney?"
So that's what he's got to say, the dad. Can I call my lawyer? Not how are my children? How's my daughter in intensive care? But can I call my lawyer? One child in intensive care, the other two starving, the one in intensive care, kidney, liver failure, sepsis, staph infection, open infected wounds on both legs, pneumonia in both lungs. A long list of ailments, malnutritions, bruises, skin infections. In interviews, one of the little girls told deputies her parents would constantly tell her she, quote, couldn't stop sinning, that she would be disciplined for not going to the bathroom at, quote, proper times and not performing her exercises or refusing to eat the vegetable puree and cereal mix. Ugh. The little 11-year-old girl and 9-year-old boy both told deputies that every night they would have cold water poured over them while they lay in bed as punishment, and then have to lay there in the cold, wet sheets all night. one little girl who had not interacted with her brother and sister or any other adults in years said she, quote, tried to keep track of the days and months by counting in her head, that she had not taken a bath in months and was denied Band-Aids for open wounds on her arms. If you could see this book the mother wrote, called A Real Friend, with children hugging on the front, this woman, the deputy stated it was evident the children were scared to leave their rooms, even to go to the bathroom at night, resulting in them wetting their pants and sleeping in urine every day, rather than risk leaving their rooms or communicating with each other. What more do we know?
Straight to you, Alexis Tereshchuk, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter. What can you tell me about a device called the, quote, whacker?
So the children have told the police that they were abused, they were beaten with something called the whacker, and it's described as like an oblong object, a wooden object that was covered with a thin piece of material, and they were just hit over and over and over again in the exact same spot, which is how there were open wounds. It would cause them to bleed, and this is what these children were beaten with.
It's my understanding that when finally interviewed, the other two siblings stated that they would have cold water poured over them while they lay in bed as punishment.
Every night they said this would happen. They were in so much trouble that the parents would come in and they would throw the cold water over them. They had no blankets. They were not allowed to get up and clean up or do anything like this. These kids were tortured. And the mom told them that, or the children told the investigators that what they were told is that they were sinners. They kept sinning, and that's why they had to be punished.
Joining you right now, the National Chief Communications Officer with childhelp.org, our friend Daphne Young. Daphne, you know, sometimes I agree with Robert Crispin and Randy Kessler. It's hard to look at the world and see good when you find out about people like Jennifer Walthall and Joseph Walthall. Another thing I found out, Daphne, is the children were so afraid to leave their rooms at night, they would be forced to wet the bed or urinate in their own clothing and would be forced to sleep in it all night through the next day. They'd have to wear it.
This is so upsetting because the viciousness and the premeditation of so much of this abuse is, it's familiar to me in many ways, but oftentimes the parents that do this depersonalize their children, right? They look at them as things that they can act upon. And one shocking window into this woman's psyche comes from reading A Real Best Friend. I reviewed her book. I looked through it. And little kids get in a fight. One goes away. Another builds a robot version of that kid. And it doesn't bring him joy because that thing doesn't respond. So she understood depersonalizing a child, turning a child into a thing, and that a real child is a joy. And so the fact that she literally wrote the book of right and wrong on depersonalization is a disturbing look at a certain kind of person living a double life. Here you see me on Twitter and I've got butterflies and flowers in my hair, and here I am behind the door, and that face of the mugshot is probably what those kids saw over their beds.
I'm looking at the photo you're talking about. It was a bio posted on Amazon.com that Walthall had a degree in elementary ed and spent 8 years teaching the fourth grade. And she's pictured in a pale pinkish purple outfit, kind of lavender. And all around her are azaleas, purple, bright, fuchsia looking azaleas. And she's wearing one in her hair. And she looks like the penultimate Earth Mother. And you'd think she'd be a great mom as a child's author. Do you remember other cases to Daphne Young with childhelp.org where the children suffered prolonged abuse that resulted in pneumonia in both lungs, were basically waterboarded in their beds at night with cold water to the point they had kidney and liver failure?
I don't remember a case with those specifics, but I do remember a lot of cases where you had a parent that showed one face to the world, an educator, somebody that looked like a kind person teaching CPR in the community, And we got a little boy exactly as your medical examiner described that, or your doctor described, that was so malnourished. His hair was falling out. His belly was distended and he was close to death and all those organs were shutting down. So we have seen that right in our Child Health Children's Center. And if we didn't have a doctor who had been doing this for 23 years, immediately take that child to the hospital, he would have died within 48 hours. That's how close this little girl was likely to death.
I want you to take a listen to our Cut 8. This is Jeff Lovekaluk at WFTV.
I'm told that the abuse described in the arrest report just scratches the surface of what happened to the children inside that home. It's not known how long the alleged abuse was going on.
Are you aware of the charges against you?
Yes.
And those charges Joseph Wolfthal faces are aggravated child abuse, child neglect with great bodily harm, and false imprisonment of his three adopted children. His wife, Jennifer, the author of children's books, is also accused of abuse. Two of the children told investigators that they were punished every night because they couldn't stop sinning. They would spank the children utilizing a specific item called a whacker, drawing blood by hitting the same spot each time. The food was a mixture of bran flake cereal, water, and vegetable puree. One of the children told investigators there were days she was fed twice, and sometimes she didn't eat her first meal until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. She also described being locked in a room for weeks and months. She spent the entire day writing sentences at the desk in her room.
That just hurts me so much to hear it. So I guess Alexis Tereshchuk, crimeonline.com, she or her siblings were the ones writing, "I have to stay flat on my bed. I can't speak without permission." Do you remember all those pages and pages of handwriting and all said the same thing?
Yes, and this was their form of punishment. The parents would make them write out thousands of sentences, the same one over and over again as part of their punishment. On top of their punishments that were, they were forced, this is the strangest thing, they were forced to do squats. And this is, you know, where you're standing and you just bend your legs, you bend your knees down and you don't hit the ground. You don't sit on a chair or anything. You just stand up and down over and over and over again. This is the torture that these children were subjected to, forced to do squats as exercise.
You know, I'm looking at additional evidence. Apparently, according to all three children who were questioned separately, they had not taken baths in months. And they would be denied bandages for the open wounds caused by the, quote, whacker, a device I guess the parents made up to spank the children, drawing blood by hitting the same spot every time. Dr. Michelle Dupree, do you think that is how the child got sepsis?
Absolutely, Nancy. It certainly could be. Not taking a bath for months is going to allow bacteria to build up on your skin. It's going to enter the body through the nose, the mouth, the eyes. Absolutely, that could cause the beginning of sepsis.
I'm trying to understand what this, quote, whacker would be. To Daphne Young with childhelp.org, it was specifically designed to hit the child at the same spot to ultimately draw blood.
Over and over again, and then they'd be doused with the water, and then these giant fans, which probably made them freeze as they lay on plastic covers with no blankets, a plastic cover over the mattresses. And I remember the little girl saying that she counted days and weeks just trying to get her head straight as to what day of the week it was, what month it was. This is like a prisoner would do on the side of a prison wall, trying to remember, where am I? What day of the week it is? So you know she was trapped in that room in pain, but also just trying to maintain some sanity.
A whacker device. You know, Randy Kessler, Atlanta trial lawyer, that device shows clear intent not to discipline, but to torture the children.
Intent's not really going to be hard to prove, and reckless disregard. The bottom line is, these people can't go before a jury, right? Can you imagine any jury giving them anything but the harshest penalty they're charged with? I mean, the harshest crime they're charged with. The intent, you know, you're right. And especially, they can't claim naivete. They can't claim they didn't know, they didn't understand that there was just a mistake. I mean, considering the combination of what they did and who they are, you know, the fact that they have she has a degree in education, she teaches, she writes children's books. Oh my God, there is obvious intent all over the place. It's I'm almost surprised there's not an insanity defense coming, but there's no way. Right? There's no way.
I don't think that they can both be declared insane. That's just a little bit too much of a coincidence. And a very interesting thing, the husband in this case, Joseph Wolfthal, is an engineer.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Now catch this. Jennifer Wolfthal's publisher, Clavis Publishing, released a statement, quote, "At Clavis, we believe children are beautiful and deserve our utmost respect and care." Then they stated they would cease further commercialization of the book. To write a children's book while you're torturing your own children? What more do we know?
Kidney failure, liver failure, double pneumonia, and sepsis. Open wounds, all three, malnutrition, waterboarding in the home. They all three separately tell the same story. And it reminds me very much of a case that we just covered. Take a listen to our Cut 11. This is Taggart Huck at WYFF News 4.
Arielle Robinson sat down with WYFF News 4 in August after winning the Food Network show Worst Cooks in America. She told us then the winnings from the show would go a long way to help her and her husband, who recently adopted three more children.
I just know that the Lord had his hands on me and he had a purpose for me to go on there.
The former middle school teacher was an aspiring comedian booked by Justin Williams to perform at a Pickens County barbecue event back in November.
She was hilarious. She was super sweet to everybody around her. And she expressed a passion for working with children and working, you know, with just the community in general.
The reality star Ariel Robinson won Worst Cook in America, got $25,000 and bragged about her blended family and using the money to help raise her adopted children. Well, Tori Rose is dead. The three-year-old little girl was found covered in bruises, and they actually tried to tell 911 it's because she drank too much water and the bruises were from CPR. She's charged with murder by child abuse. And there she is, a reality star on TV. Of course, the husband said he could hear the beatings, and he finally told his wife, "You've gone too far." Well, the child is dead. And according to Facebook photos of the little girl that they posted, she had been covered with bruises many times before. She's not the only one where what you see is not what you're getting. Take a listen to our Cut 14, Jessica Stone, ACGTN News.
Officials say when they entered the Turpin home, they found a modern-day horror. Foul smell, extremely dirty conditions, and they say it was immediately clear that the siblings were malnourished. Authorities say they found three of the children shackled to their beds with chains and padlocks, kept in dark and unclean conditions inside this Riverside County, California home. Deputies located 12 children inside the house as young as 2 years old. While the family kept this active Facebook page, which appears to show a happy group, trips, vacations, smiling faces, authorities discovered that seven of the children pictured appeared so malnourished that they did look like children. They were actually adults. The oldest is 29 years old.
Those children chained to their beds, but if you look at their Facebook, they're all dressed in matching red Disney shirts, the, you know, thing number one, thing number two. They had all matching outfits on various trips. They were all there at a revival of the vows ceremony with the parents. I mean, it goes on and on. Who would have ever thought these children were being so horribly treated? One finally escaped, crawled out a window, and called 911 to save her sisters. Horrible, horrible conditions. Inside one of the closets in the Turpin home, there were scratches on the wall where the children had tried to get out. Straight back to Daphne Young with childhelp.org, one of our favorite organizations. I know you remember the Turpin case in the House of Horrors.
Absolutely. And a lot of the kids that, you know, while we have to protect the anonymity of all of our children, a lot of the kids that we see in these headlines come through Child Help. And it's horrible enough to deal with the child abuse that comes from drug addicts, the child abuse that comes from mental health cases, the child abuse that comes from people that are, you know, completely sort of out of it in terms of finances and otherwise. But the scariest ones, the ones that I'm still trying to figure out, how do we detect these folks, are those that have this great facade, those that have good educations, those that have resources. They live among us. These are people that are our neighbors and people that we interact with potentially and don't recognize. And those are the scariest abusers, and they create houses of horrors. And the children, it takes years for these kids to recover and be put on a path of hope and healing.
Abusers you would never expect. Take a listen to our friends over at the New York Times.
Hundreds of women say Larry Nassar sexually abused them. It's one of the worst sexual abuse scandals in the history of sports, and it went on for more than two decades. Nassar's patients felt honored to be treated by the best of the best. Nassar typically carried out his abuse under the guise of a medical treatment. He hijacked a rare pelvic therapy that involves vaginal penetration and used it to treat all sorts of ailments. He ignored protocols such as using a glove, asking consent, or having a medical chaperone present.
And when I was 14 years old, I tore my hamstring in my right leg. This was when he started performing the procedure that we are all now familiar with.
The next visit was for my shoulder, which I then found out my hips were out of alignment, which then made my spine and my pelvic bone out of alignment as well. And this is when Larry decided that it was medically acceptable to violate a 16-year-old girl.
So from a well-respected couple in the community that had a house of horrors going on, homeschooling their children in order to abuse them, to now a well-known book author, to an Olympic coach abusing dozens of young girls. With me, Daphne Young with the childhelp.org organization. Daphne, you have actually worked with some of Nassar's victims.
Absolutely. Olympic Consultants Foundation for Global Sports connected us with some of these brave, what they call themselves, sister survivors. And when we talked a little bit earlier with law enforcement and others about being jaded, this is the piece of child help that's kept me here, which is these women are working with us in Child Help Speak Up Be Safer Athletes and a Courage First hotline that is both a prevention education for youth sports, which we've reached well over 160,000 children and families, and a hotline for youth athletes. So these gals are using very difficult experiences to create safety nets for kids in youth sports. And so that's the kind of stuff that allows us to keep doing this work, because for every awful family like the ones we're discussing today, and for every creep like Nassar who hurts these kids, there are amazing women and survivors and young boys that come out of these circumstances and change lives and use their voice for good.
You know, Alexis Tereshchuk, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter, we know a little bit about what these parents, the Wolfthals, said at the hospital. They didn't just blame it on slip and falls, all the injuries. What else did they say?
So when Joseph Wolfthal took his daughter to the hospital, he told the doctors that were there, because this child had such huge, like, obvious wounds, he said that she was hurt because she brushed her teeth too hard.
Did you just say the excuse was she brushed her teeth too hard?
Yep, she brushed her teeth too hard. That's the excuse that he tried to use. And he's also blaming his wife.
It was also the whacker. Dr. Michelle Dupree, a forensic pathologist, former medical examiner, author of Homicide Investigation Field Guide and Investigating Child Abuse Field Guide. How do you perceive the so-called whacker? And can you imagine the sense of dread these children felt when they saw the whacker pulled out?
Nancy, I've had a couple of cases like this, and I've seen things such as the end of a broom handle or the broom handle itself, which can cause significant injury, being used over and over and over again to cause this.
Robert Crispin, I prosecuted a lot of child abuse, child molestation cases, as have you in your investigations. What do you make of child witnesses?
They are the best witnesses to law enforcement. They're the best witnesses to prosecutors. They're so innocent. They tell you things that they shouldn't know at their age. They're very specific. they're not old enough to learn how to manipulate law enforcement, to manipulate a prosecutor. I have found in interviewing so many child victims that you get goosebumps and chills when you sit there and listen to the details and the horror that this kid went through. Like, how do you know this at 11 years old? How do you know that at 8 years old? The best witnesses ever.
You know, we're talking about a child's book author. Has her books on Amazon.com. Very well established. The husband, very educated, an engineer. So how do you take a child witness like Robert Crispin's talking about and stack them up against a defendant? What about a defendant that nobody would suspect? Take a listen to Tiffany Taylor at Hollywood Reporter.
Christina's tell-all memoir that inspired the film of the same name painted Joan Crawford as abusive and an alcoholic. While her adopted brother Christopher always supported her claims, their twin siblings Kathy and Sydney did not. According to the book, Joan often went on what Christina called night raids, where she would wake her up and make her clean messes she hadn't made for hours on end. Christina also said Joan hated wire hangers. She reportedly once woke her up in the middle of the night for using them. In a scene that's infamously depicted in the 1981 movie, she's said to have dragged her daughter by the hair, yelling, "No wire hangers," while beating her. Christina also claims she was once starved for days when she refused to eat an undercooked bloody steak, all in a bid for her mother to further control her. According to the memoir, Joan allegedly kept Christopher constricted in bed in a sleep-safe device and tied Christina up in the shower at night. And when Christina was 13 years old, she supposedly suffered one final brutal beating from her mother in which she thought she was going to be choked out.
You know, what is that, Daphne Young, where the children are restricted, tied up? We hear it over and over again, like in this case, where they're forced to lay flat on the bed in Turpin. They were chained to the bed or put into a closet and locked in. The constriction of the child, I find that to be a common theme.
It's a complete lack of control in the parent. It starts off sometimes small, a little discipline. I'm going to put you in your room. You need to stay away from this or that. And becomes a torture chamber, essentially. It's like the torturing of prisoners. And so much of this repetition and cruelty then becomes status quo. So every little breach of a boundary can open up a new boundary. That's why I say, you know, I don't even like people spanking children, because every breach of being a little out of control can make you much, much further out of control. And then, you know, not everybody obviously is going to end up like this. But we see, kids will tell us how it started and it seems so small, and then it turns into something that is a true nightmare.
Jennifer and Joseph Wolfthal rot in hell with a brief pit stop in the penitentiary. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.